Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the Marisol Nichols podcast. I am very excited about this episode. My guests today are TV host, activist, and producer Jeannie Mai Jenkins, along with the director of Surviving Sex Trafficking and Stopping Trafficking, Sadhvi Siddhi Shree, who just also happens to be a monk, and we'll learn a little bit more about that. So thank you for joining me on the Marisol Nichols podcast, and welcome. First of all, thank you guys so much for coming on. I'm so grateful for you doing this podcast, and I'm really excited for today's conversation. My biggest question for you is mainly the same questions that I always get asked. So it's kind of nice to reverse it and ask someone else. How did you first hear about human trafficking?
That's a really important question because I think most of us don't start out knowing what trafficking is. It's certainly not something that I learned in school. My friends don't talk about it. You know, it's not a word that's like thrown around in the streets. So I learned maybe about a little over 10 years ago when I traveled to Vietnam and I saw it happen. Basically, we have a family friend. She's like a cousin. So when I came to Vietnam and started to have a conversation with her, every time I started to come near to, you know, what are your friends like? Where do you hang out? What kind of work are you getting into? Because now she's old enough to, you know, get into working for the family. She was 17 at the time. And she said that she was dropping out of school and she said that she was taking on some night jobs. Well, one night I ended up following her without her knowing and found out that she started to work at a brothel. And I didn't even know what a brothel was. I mean, the extent of my nightlife was like a club, but I immediately could tell when you had women in different closed doors that would come in and out on the hour, check in. Men would come out of these doors, exchange money. I would see these lounges where a lot of men were waiting and different women serving them naked or half-dressed, children running around in the same venue and menus of pictures of women. Like, I'm explaining exactly the highlight of what I saw because it was so surreal. You know, I really thought if you walked quickly by it, you would have thought it was a nightclub. But when you entered the doors, it was a totally different scene. So after digging, I found out that she was working there unwillingly because she had to pay off a debt that her family owed. Oof. I was mortified. I didn't know how to even react to her because she was so ashamed of it. And the amount was something under $2,000 for her to work there. And each of her clients, she told me, was maybe around $8 that she was getting paid each time. And her family knew about this, you know? And so it wasn't until I brought the story back home and told one of my friends, who's one of my best friends now, she explained to me, Jeannie, that's human trafficking.
First of all, can I just say, like, so well done on you for following her.
I think I did it because I didn't know what I was walking into, if I'm honest. I can't take the credit because I did not have any idea of what it was.
Right, but you cared enough to go, something's wrong. And I need to dig in and find out more where, you know, let's just face it, a lot of other people would maybe just talk about it and go, God, that was so weird, and then go about their day. So
I think it's why sitting here on this screen and sharing it with Sadali, this is exactly why I joined forces with the Siddhiatin Retreat, the ladies of the Stopping Traffic and the Survivors of Sex Trafficking documentaries, because these ladies go into the trenches. These ladies do this on a daily in order to make the documentaries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, it's anybody like Sadali here who are willing and able and persistent and resilient to do this. I mean, that to me are the heroes.
I understand that very well.
Thank you, Jeannie.
And so that brings me beautifully to introduce Sadali. So now, Sadali, thank you so much for being here. And thank you. I want to thank you for showing the issues that we face with trafficking also in the United States. And I know you said it in the film, and most people that are familiar with this world know the misconception that people have out there. So anytime that we can also show, hey guys, this is our problem too. In the United States, this is our kids. I hate to say it, but I have found personally that it makes us care more. First question right out of the gate is, what made you decide to become a monk? How does that work? How does that happen? Because I am so not familiar with that world at all.
I was deployed to Iraq. I was an army medic, and I experienced a lot of violence. I saw it, I experienced it mentally, emotionally. Being in a negative environment, it changes you. And I've always been a spiritual person, always dreamed of changing the world, helping other people. And after deployment, I really had to ask myself, like, you know, what do I really want to do with my life? Like, I really want to help other people. Yes, when I was deployed to Iraq, you know, I helped people medically, but I wanted to help other people more and in a bigger way. But first, before helping other people, you have to help yourself. And so by becoming a monk, taking vows, dedicating my life to spirituality, it's like I was able to kind of gain the strength to not only help myself, but also others too. Spirituality has kind of become the fountain for me to give me that energy to, you know, grow spiritually and also help others as well. And it's what keeps me balanced in this work, because human trafficking is super, super, super dark. When I first learned about trafficking, I watched it through the movie The Whistleblower. And basically, it was in Bosnia, the UN was involved. And just seeing in the film, like all of these girls, these women getting trafficked and going through so much excruciating pain. I remember just after watching that film, like I just felt it in my body. I felt all of that pain and I was just in tears. And it was like, I have to do something about it one day. And I remember asking my teacher, Acharyashree, you know, I want to do something now. And this was like a while ago. And he's like, it's not the right time. You're not ready. And I was just like, well, I just have to sit on it until I am. And it wasn't until the first film, Stopping Traffic, a few years ago, when it was the right time.
First of all, the film is beautiful. I've watched both of them.
Thank you.
I love them both. Congratulations. I know that the second one, Surviving Sex Trafficking, is coming out, I think, like any day now, I believe. So that's phenomenal. And just my hat's off to you, women, and we need more of these. And thank you again for doing that. Jeannie, I just want to let you know that I can't sleep. That's what did it for me. I just couldn't sleep. I'm like, I don't know how to go to sleep. I can't sleep. I can't put my head on my pillow until I do something about this. So I understand there, I the power of not sleeping and what your mind does. And I found that I didn't start sleeping until I was able to start doing things about it and making a difference. Right. And then I could sleep. So I understand that.
Something you said earlier that really, really stood out to me is that you have to find a way to get people to care.
Yep.
You know, there are so many issues in the world today. Getting somebody to understand trafficking, let alone care, is definitely a challenge.
Yep.
And for me, the thing that I can emphasize most is that it can happen anywhere, especially if you've had any past of abuse or violation to your body and mind.
Yep.
That's what trafficking is. It's a coercion. It's a convincing. It's a manipulation. It's a mind effing. Sorry, but it really is.
And yeah.
The thing about trafficking is it preys on the one thing that every single person has, a dream. Everybody has a dream. Even if it's as basic as, I want to make enough money to help my family. I want to get out of my city. I want to make it big as a star. I want to get a freaking job. Just that alone, once a trafficker can find out what your dream is, boom. The process starts. And that's another thing about trafficking that's so creepy. It's a process. It's not you're thrown in a bag. It doesn't happen overnight. Like, obviously, all three of us know if we're walking down the street or a stranger approaches us, we're not dumb. We're not going to talk to the stranger and get trafficked. But that's not how it happens.
Right.
It happens in a conversation. It happens in an online connection. It happens when somebody gives you a want ad and says, oh, wait, you want to make some money? I got a fix for you. I got a way to do this. Or you want to get out of this country? Even what's happening in the Ukraine, that is opening a plethora of doors for trafficking.
Please.
That alone right there is already making it more immediate and possible. COVID made trafficking easier and accessible because people were desperate and they needed to make
that's
money.
Right.
So that's the thing that we need to really amplify in order to get people to care is it can happen anywhere and it can absolutely happen to you or somebody you love.
Right. And might already be. I want to ask you because it's one of the things that I find hard, right? So woman to woman and both of us being in this business, we have this voice, right? So we have this voice where people will listen. And so they want to hear whatever it is that you have to say, whether you're endorsing lipstick and makeup or this subject. And one of the things that I find hard is how do I marry the message? Because people will follow me on Instagram to find out, I don't know what makeup I use or what fashion thing I'm doing that. But what I really want to talk about is this stuff. How have you found that sort of balancing that life of being a public figure, but trying to get people to also understand like, hey guys, this is what I really care about.
You meet the people who are going through it. You actually meet and hear the stories of people going through it. But a person's life, a girl down the street, a dreamer of a man who left his family to go try to make money for his family, but only to get trafficked and not able to go back to his family. Like when you hear the stories, that can't escape your mind. And that is where the humanity comes out to be able to try to do something for people. And that is exactly why I joined with Sedalia and Anabuti to make Stopping Traffic and also Survivors of Sex Trafficking. Do you have to go out in the trenches and do what, you know, Sedalia and Anabuti does or what I do? No, but it is your responsibility as a human being to understand what is happening out there to fellow human beings on the daily, so much that it is one of the top tier largest crimes that is happening today. So that is where you have to marry with yourself. If you're a living, breathing human being who covets family and your own dreams, you have to know what trafficking is. And you have to just know the bare basics to look out for it and help another person.
That's going to bring me now to you and the films that you've made. You mentioned in the first film how you were a little, you're like, how do I go and approach these people? And how do I get in and get into these places and the brothels in India and the Philippines and all of that? So I first want to ask you, you know, because I've also been there and I've seen it and I've come face to face with the traffickers and they look like normal people, smiling, happy even. Like I want them to look like a monster, but they're not at all. It shocks me. What was it like for you the first time you went into, when you got to the Philippines, when you got to India, when you went into the brothels and you're like, I'm going to film this and tell these stories. Can you talk a little bit about that for our audience and what that experience is like?
Walking into the red light district was just, I mean, there's no words because, you know, you're there. I was there. You know, I'm trying to be in positive thoughts. You see all of these women lining the street. There's men from so many different countries, including the United States, Europe, and you can tell, and they're all there to buy sex. And I'm walking, wearing white down the strip. And it was just like, okay, well, I already know I'm going to be attracting extra attention. And a friend of mine just had a camera there just to kind of capture it. But it's scary. It's sad. And then I think, well, if I'm feeling this way, imagine the girls, the women that are there that are used to this on the daily, and they're acting as if they want to be there. So, you know, that was in the Philippines. And then going into Mexico, it was different because I don't communicate in Spanish. Sadvi Anubhuti does, the other filmmaker. And so she was the one communicating. So I'm basically just observing and experiencing. And the activist, Rosie Orozco, who invited us to Mexico.
Rosie, I love Rosie.
She's like, oh, love Rosie. Yeah, she's fiery. She was like, oh, here, meet my driver. This is Mario. He's an ex-trafficker. And we're like, what? Like it was just, I just felt so conflicted inside. Like, how am I supposed to trust someone that used to sell women? But I'm like, okay, well, Rosie trusts him. And, you know, she shared a backstory like, hey, he's changed. He changed the jail. He was there for 12 years. He found God. I'm like, okay, well, it challenged me because it's like, I'm trying to practice nonviolence. I'm trying to practice compassion. So can I understand this individual as a soul, even though he sinned or hurt so many people, but can I go beyond my own, you know, assumptions and judgment and just meet him on a soul level? And so, you know, I enter the car, I'm filming, Anubhuti and him and Rosie's, security, you know, they were all chatting and I was just like, wow, I just can't believe I'm with an ex-trafficker right now. And then he brought us into, the dangerous city. You know, he's like, oh, this is pointing out, this is where I used to traffic girls. This is where I used to kidnap them. This is where they would be. This is where my family, and you can just feel like this darkness in the streets there. And so, I mean, it was just wild and definitely had to meditate, you know, after that experience, because it's just so dark. It's so heavy, but you also have to rise up. You have to find your balance. You have to come to your peace. And then you see the other side, right? So you visit the shelters and you're spending time with the survivors and they bring you so much joy. They're smiling, they're clapping, they're doing their art. They're giving you hugs. And you're like, this is what it's all about. Despite the dark, especially with trafficking, there's also light too. And that's why they're the inspiration. And kind of to touch on the first film with Stopping Traffic, it was more of educational, shock and awe, a lot of statistics and so forth. But, you know, speaking with Jeannie and Anubhuti, we were like, well, we need to go and dive deeper into survivor stories, because the education, the statistics, it only hits your heart to a certain degree. It makes you uncomfortable, but you can go to sleep at night.
Right.
But
right.
when you see a survivor, you experience them, and you, you know, we all created this trust with them that they can open up their heart to us and their pain to us, and they're, and we're with them on this journey. It transmits into the film. So this way it makes the audience care in a much deeper way. They will care. They have to care. If they don't care, something's wrong.
The thing that I wanted to point out, especially for your documentaries that you've done, is you've shown both sides. You've shown the little kids and you've shown the grownups. And you had Dr. King on there to tell his story of a male, which most people don't realize that as well. We need those stories, and we need people like you to go in there and sneak in there with the cameras to go, hi, everyone, this is what it looks like. Like the image that you're conjuring in your mind when you do hear the statistics or you hear the rumors or you see the news piece, which there was not news pieces 13 years ago. Now there is, thank goodness. But for you to show that inside, it makes all the difference in the world. I'm also going to jump. How did you two meet? How did that happen?
I reached out to Jeannie's team. I saw she was a celebrity, you know, raising awareness about human trafficking, because for the first film, we wanted to focus on, you know, the leading voices of the movement. And so we reached out to Jeannie's team to see if she was interested. And that's why we interviewed her for our film. And we wanted to learn, you know, why is she so passionate about this? Why does she care so much?
Right.
And it was such an honest interview. I mean, it was just so open. And, you know, a lot of people hold back. They don't want to go to their emotions because, you know, it's a hard topic. But Jeannie went there. Jeannie went there. And I feel like that's what helped our audience realize the depth of human trafficking, because she was so honest about it. And with the first film, she's like, she loved it. And she's like, can I join in on as an executive producer? And then of course, we're like, okay, let's work together again. Like, we got to keep doing more and more films.
And the same in return, when I met Sadali and Anubhuti, the ladies, first of all, a female powered directorial team, they produce, they edit, they write. I mean, the fact that I'm on set on most productions that require like a team of 30 plus, it's two women that are doing most of the light work, and then sourcing out with what they can, with, you know, with through donations of who can produce, who can place music over the pieces. And just, I don't think I tell you ladies enough, I'm always so just in awe of the fervor you guys have to make great work to tell these people's stories the way they deserve. And again, just two women. I mean, I was sitting there carrying it, like I, as talent, you know, whatever, when you see me hosting shows, I arrive and then I get my glam and then I'm like, okay, let's go. Where's my lighting, right? These ladies are the lighting. They're the cameras, they're the audio. Like I was there with them. I was like, who's going to care? Oh, we are. I need to get my ass up. I got to help carry some of these things because it's us.
Yep.
So, I mean, that alone, the fact that they traveled, and by the way, like right before COVID really hit, these ladies were tethering the line of danger because COVID was about to hit. And they could have been stuck in these countries that they were visiting, but they were so persistent to finish this documentary. They were like, we promised these ladies we were going to meet them. We're going to go find them and we're going to tell their stories, even if we get stuck in the countries. I mean, that's how hardcore survivors of sex trafficking was. So yeah, when you meet women like that, you're like, okay, point the direction. I'm following. Let's go.
That's beautiful. You know, you mentioned that you were like, I want to do something. I want to help. And then your spiritual teacher said, not yet. What made you go, okay, I'm going to make a film. That's how I'm going to help. That's the direction that I'm going to go with this.
I was planning to visit the Philippines because my family lives out there. And I was like, I can't just go to the Philippines and just visit. Like, I want to actually do something and do something purposeful. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I can do like a workshop, a yoga workshop, meditation workshop. And I'm like, no, that's that's not what it's about. I want to, you know, do something deeper and even more meaningful. And I thought about it and I was like, what have I been really wanting to do? And then the human trafficking subject came up and I was like, maybe I can do that. And so I started researching, you know, about human trafficking in the Philippines. And I was like, we have to do something. So then I went back to my teacher and asked, and he was like, okay, let's do it. I'm like, really? Like, it's the right time. Wow. I was like, that's a big project. Like we don't know how to film. We don't know how to, you know, we don't know what we're doing. And then like all the doubts started to come in and he's like, no,
sure,
it's the right time.
That's fantastic. And how did you get in? How did you, I think you mentioned something about this in one of the films that like you were just reaching out. I think, this is for the second one with the survivors. And you just, can you tell that story? Have you just posted and was like, hey, anyone willing to come aboard? Do you mind like spelling that out for audience? Because I think it's really, really cool. And I think they'll love that.
Yes, absolutely. With our first film, Stopping Traffic, what was nice is our movie became a movement and it's like the movement helped me create the second movie. And so we created a following on Instagram and, you know, a lot of people have watched the film. So I thought, well, why not for our second film, just put a post out and see what happens. And it's interesting because Angela, she's in Surviving Sex Trafficking. She watched our film in a New York theater and she saw the post and she's like, I want to be involved. If you're ever in Dallas, I'd love to be featured in your film. And we're like, we're an hour away from you. So it just shows the power of social media. People are watching, people are interested in learning. And there's a lot of survivors that follow our accounts and they're, you know, DMing us saying like, thank you so much. Like, I'm not ready to share my story, but thank you for what you're doing. And I'm like, how are you thanking us? Like, you're the ones who have gone through so much. Like, we're just trying to do our best to give you a platform, you know, and be a voice for you all. So yeah, it was just an amazing moment, full circle. Angela, you know, watches our first film in New York. And then now she's in our second film.
Yeah. I think when I first heard about it, this was back in 2012. And what I didn't understand, I've talked about this before, and I'm sure you both will understand this, but what I didn't understand is why is there no riots in the street? Why is there not a battle cry to end this? I don't understand. And the only thing that I could think of was that people don't know. People just don't know about it. So I was like, well, what's the best way to let people know about it? Because I'm this firm believer that like, look, the bad guys all know about it. The girls that are being trafficked know about it. The customers sure know about it. But what about the good people out there that normally might not cross paths with this? And if we don't educate them, how is this expected to change? For me, it's always the medium. And I've seen a lot, I've seen a lot of the documentaries done. One of the things that always gets me, and maybe you both can talk about this because you didn't put it in the documentaries, is they will sexualize it. So that I'm like, great. So now all the pedophiles are watching your documentary because you're showing the 12-year-old. And I was very grateful that you didn't try to sexualize this because there's nothing sexy about it. I don't know if you ran into any of that when you were, you know, going through the editing or going into this or going into that, but I've seen it. I've seen it on the posters for some of the films. I've seen it even with good-minded people. And then they'll go look, you know, they'll say trafficking and then they'll pan up from like the young girl's foot all the way up her leg. And I'm like, what are you doing? And so I want to thank you also for just being like, look, this is gritty. This is ugly. There's nothing.
Yeah. The survivors, you know, they wanted a raw film. They wanted their stories to be told. They didn't want it sugarcoated or made pretty. Good. And you don't want to make it pretty because it is an ugly world. So that's why it was important for us to keep as close, you know, to the truth as possible, like to share. I mean, there's some gritty stories that did not make the film. And it was like, and I wanted it in the film because that's the stuff that almost made me throw up doing in the interview process, like those certain stories, not because I'm like, oh, I want other people to, you know, hear about it, but it's just like, this is the capacity of violence that human beings are doing to other human beings, but it was too much. So you have to walk a fine line because I remember with our first film, when we would approach agents and distributors, it's like, well, it's not commercial enough. And I'm like, really? Like, it's not commercial enough? And you have to, like, it's a totally different world because, you know, distributors want to make their money and so forth. And I get that. But it's like, well, we need to tell the truth about what's happening. So I feel that with the second film, we were able to find a better balance. And that's why I feel that we're getting a lot more opportunities to share the film with the world. And we have an awesome distributor. One, they're courageous. It's a female team. They're totally on our side and they're ready, you know, to approach people to pick up the film, because we have to show the gritty, but we also, through the survivors, show their sweetness, show their kindness, show their courage. We also have to show that there's hope. And I feel like that through that kind of storytelling, that's what helps people to watch the film and care.
I agree. And it does. And it works. And it's beautiful. Jeannie, if you don't mind me asking, when you executive produced both of these films, were you a mom yet? I don't believe
no,
so, right?
I'm a mom.
Brand new. So. That's what I thought.
So, yeah.
How, yeah. Because for me, when I learned I was a mom, and it was like, I had a hard time hearing these stories and then looking at my little daughter. How, since becoming a mom and knowing the truth of what's out there, how's that going?
I mean, I have the same sentiments and same fire burning towards trafficking and those that are involved as I do now as a mom. It doesn't change at all, because I, at one point in my life, you know, I was raped at a young age by my cousin, and that didn't happen by him forcing me down or locking me up or tying me up. It was through a process of having me trust him, even look up to him. You know, he taught me about The Cure and Depeche Mode, like really cool bands that I really thought I was so cool knowing, and taught me how to dress mod. And, you know, I got my first pair of Converses from him, like all the things that are super cool for me as a Vietnamese kid in a school where I was, you know, trying to find myself at that age. There was a grooming involved that made me trust him. And that is no different than what happens to somebody who later walks into the arms of a trafficker and can't run away, you know? So there's a part of me that no matter how much therapy I go through or how many people I talk to or how many ways I try to forget it or how many kids I have, I'm never going to forget what that felt like that happened to me. And there is a little girl inside of me that still screams at me to this day that says, why didn't you fight back? Why didn't you hit him? Why didn't you? So many things. It, to this day, that voice is, I can hear it on the daily. But I can't turn back time. What I have to do now as a grown woman who is woke to this, like I got to do everything I can to help raise the voices of people who maybe are in that same situation or don't know what that voice sounds like. Because for a while, even when I learned about trafficking, it took me a while to learn, wait, if I was getting trafficked or if somebody was brainwashing me to get me to a place to do things that I'm uncomfortable doing, what the hell do I say? Like, what do I say? What are the words? Because honestly, up until maybe a couple of years ago, until I really faced what happened to me because of, you know, going through things like this, only unearthed what happened to me. And Sadali can speak to that as well for her own journey. But the blessing is the curse. Like, I did open up and realize, wow, I don't even know to this day what I would say if a man touched me or did something appropriate with me besides getting violent. But there are power in words, and I need to equip myself. What are those words that I can tell my daughter to say if somebody touches you weird, or if somebody is too close to you or already making you feel a little like your intuition is starting, your flags are going off? What do you say? Because in most situations, even when I was dating as a 20 and a 30-year-old later on, I didn't know the words to say if a guy was creepy or weird. I was just trying to look for the out. But no, why am I my lips sewn shut and I don't know what to say? Right. Because somewhere in my upbringing, women were taught to behave and to smile and be ladylike. And somewhere in there, I wasn't taught the words to fight back or to be very firm, so a man knows to be afraid of what I could do if it goes beyond this. So yeah, so I think as a mom, I just feel more better about myself that I know. I already know for Monica, my daughter, it is never too young to teach her about consent. Yep. Never. Like I have a YouTube show, and my mom and I were talking. I had a very open talk with my mom about what she taught me and how I would teach different. And part of that conversation I taught her was, Mom, you never taught me what to say if I was in an uncomfortable situation, especially with somebody who's a predator. You know, I didn't know how to say, stop. This makes me feel uncomfortable. Right. I'm not okay with this. You can't touch me there. You know, I didn't know how to say those things at 8 years old. Those are the things that I'm very proud of myself to know at 43, to know what to say now. Because I think that it starts out as basics like that for other women out there to know exactly how to spot it, how to listen to your intuition, and then how to speak it to stop it.
First of all, thank you for saying all that and being so open with what happened. And just to be kind of raw in the sense that it's somewhat known, but when I was 12 years old, for me, it was a girl. It was a friend who took me. It took me forever to understand like why she could do this, but she took me to a party when I was 12. It was like sort of like this weekend where the night before I drank alcohol for the first time in my life. And the next day we were going to this party and it was during the day. And she took me there and it was her and me and six guys, one of which she was dating. And I wanted to be pretty. I was sort of like, I was that girl in junior high that no one wanted to sit next to. I was that girl that would take that plate and go, where am I going to sit? I was the girl that would get picked last for the team. I was called a loser for as long as I can remember. And I had also grown up with a neighbor that had been molesting me since I was 5 years old. So I already had this sort of shadow on me, right? So this girl took me to the party and she said, they all want to see how pretty you are. I didn't know any better. And so I went and she left me there. To this day, I go, why the hell did I go? Like, how can you be so stupid? How come I didn't, like, anyway, you do that later. You know, you always do that later. Try to fix it. But long story short, I think I drank an entire bottle of Seagram 7 whiskey because they were going to pump my stomach and smoked whatever they put in the bong. And I only have flashes of what occurred. I have flashes of being on a bed naked with all the boys surrounding the bed watching and one of the guys coming towards me naked and me trying to get up and I'm naked and I'm like, I don't even know how I got naked and pushed back down. I have memories of being outside on the sidewalk, being kicked that same day and being told, get up, bitch. And I ended up being dumped at the police station. And that's how I made it home. They literally dumped me on the steps and rang the doorbell and ran away. I know that that thing of how easy it is for others to judge, why doesn't, like, especially the girls that you highlight, Sedali, like, well, why didn't they just leave? Why didn't you just say no? Well, how come you just don't walk away? And I don't think people understand unless you're actually in it. As you mentioned, Jeannie, that manipulation. And then the horror of what happened and the shame of what happened. And I know, and the whole reason I talk about, you know, like, why did I get into this? I'm like, because I ran away 1,000 times. I did every drug under the sun. I didn't know what the hell to do because everyone knew, the whole damn town knew. And no one, I think maybe one adult was like, you know, that you can press charges. And I was like, no. Nah. Because everyone else nicknamed me doggy style. And I ended up being that girl. Did you hear about that girl at the party that got drunk and f***ed all those guys? Like, no one was like, she's 12. You know? So all the stories that we highlight, we always talk about these survivors that had a history of sexual abuse. They had a history of these things and they run away. And, you know, one of the things that we always say, as you guys probably know, is like, well, what are they running away from? Why are they running away? And that's where the traffickers are, right there, to grab them and give them that love and that sense of belonging. And then once something like that happens to you, it's that shame of like, what do you, now what? Your whole world has changed. And I know that if that were now, I would have been trafficked in a heartbeat, in the blink of an eye. I know that. And so, you know, I haven't, this speaks a lot to you, Jeannie. I haven't talked about that in this detail about what happened, but I can't let you share what happened to you without also sharing.
Before you change that topic, I just want to really quick embrace you and your space that you just trusted us and everybody who's going to be listening to this, Marisol. What you just did right there was profound because it takes people, not just women, but it takes people years if they decide to ever look back and actually remember it enough to share it. And that is why today we have such a problem with people having issues with survivors or women of sexual abuse coming out 20, right. 30, 40 years later. Like, why did you say something then? It's a money grab. It's because he's famous. No, it's because sometimes it takes that much time to feel okay with it. And Sedali and I both actually share that with you, with that time that it takes to find the words to even like go back and remember it. And I can even see the pain in your eyes as you're sitting here rekindling those memories. And even your body language, your whole body language changes as you're remembering what that felt like to be in that room alone with these men. Like I felt every part of you in this moment. So I just want you to know that I'm embracing you from here. And it's what you just did right there when you asked, how do you marry, you know, the care for this topic? How do you marry the care for these people that are going through this? What you just did right there unleashed, I promise you, a number of people who have listened to this, who are going to listen to this podcast. I know, because for me, that's why I decided to share. I heard somebody else, I don't want to put the spotlight on them, but somebody else that is in the public eye shared their story, and I was befuddled by how they were able to find the words and to do it so well. And I was like, oh wait, I have my words too, because I was there. I know what all the things I felt, because I've been living it for this long. So I just really applaud you. Like, that takes a moment to really harness and own that you did that. So thank you.
Thank you. I wouldn't have, I couldn't let you share without, I'd be a hypocrite. So thank you. You know, there's something else I want to say about it, because what killed me the most was, it was a girl. The girl left. And in my travels with the subject, the ones that kill me more than anything is when it's female traffickers, when it's girls doing it to girls, and you're like, sister, you know?
It's in trafficking, if you're really slick with your game, you actually put a woman in the forefront, because they'll get a woman much easier, because they're preying on the what you just said, the trust of sisters.
It's probably the most heartbreaking thing that I, you know, I've seen it over and over and over again, but still it's such a hard pill to swallow. Such a hard pill to swallow when it's a girl doing it to a girl. And I want to make the point, I'm going to look straight into the camera on this and anyone who's watching, but to get involved, you don't have to have gone through something like this. You just have to care about others that have or are continually going through this. And I just want to make that clear. Like, it's you can be a man, a woman, a boy, a girl. It doesn't matter. We all belong to the same group of human beings. We are all human beings. So therefore, we are all a group. And you don't have to have gone through some trauma to care about your fellow human being. So we welcome everybody. I want to thank my two guests, these two beautiful women, for everything that they are doing to help combat sex trafficking and give a voice to the survivors. And I look forward to working with them in the future. Everyone, thank you for tuning in to the Marisol Nichols podcast. See you on the next one.